TCJ Radio International presents Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. On the evening of July 16th, 2015, I received a phone call telling me that my old friend and SIS collaborator, Aubrey Diem, had passed away peacefully the night before at a clinic not far from his home in Zinal in Canton Valley, southern Switzerland. He was 82 and had suffered a brief illness. I knew Aubrey since about 2000. He was a retired professor of geography and history at the University of Waterloo, Ontario, Canada, and had made his home in the Swiss mountains for decades. Aubrey was a world traveler, a prolific writer and photojournalist, and fascinating discussion partner, both on and off the microphone. But he was also a sensitive, compassionate human being who was appalled by the unfairness and suffering in our world. Aubrey's contributions to Switzerland in Sound can be found under Interesting People, Places and Things, and in Letter from Switzerland, initialed AD. My last meeting with Aubrey Diem was in March 2014 in Domodossola, in nearby Italy, where we got together to do a reportage about the town and also to update a biographical discussion with Aubrey. We're presenting that biographical recording now in his memory.
And welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. We're talking to an interesting person today. His name is Aubrey Diem, Professor Aubrey Diem, a retired professor of geography and history. He lives in Zinal, in the tiny village, actually, in the French-speaking part of Canton Valley in southern Switzerland. I've known Aubrey for 12 or 13 years by now, and we are sitting in a bistro in the town of Domodossola, at the southern end of the Simplon Pass and rail tunnel. We were here today because we wanted to do a report about Domodossola for Switzerland in Sound, and you'll find that on the website under Places and Things. But right now I want to talk to Aubrey. It's been many years since Aubrey and I had a chance to sit down and to record his story, his personal story, which is a fascinating one. And we're taking this opportunity. We don't see each other that often. We talk a lot on the phone, but we don't see each other physically. So here we are, ironically, in a place that we both visit very often, Domodossola in northern Italy. And I'd like to put a few questions to Aubrey to pay homage to his life, his very long life. And he's in good shape. He's well. Aubrey is a world traveler. He's a prolific photojournalist. He's a writer. He's written many books about Switzerland and history and other parts of the world. And Aubrey, your story begins actually in Detroit, Michigan, in the United States. But you made a choice at a very early age to move, to emigrate to Canada. This is back, I believe, in the early 60s. That was unheard of at the time.
Detroit actually is north of Canada. It's hard to believe, but if you look at southern Ontario, you see that there is a peninsula which goes south of Detroit, and the two cities of Windsor and Detroit are connected both by a tunnel and by a suspension bridge. And so Canada wasn't a foreign place. And then when I had a chance to move to Canada, I decided to do it. It was during the Vietnam War.
So that made you, by American definition, a pinko, a suspect pinko.
In a way, yes, because one time there was a knock on my door in Detroit, and the Office of Naval Intelligence, they just knocked, and there they were, and then they came in, and they said, "Do you know a guy by this name?" And I said, "Yes." "Do you think he would make a good naval officer if he went to naval officer schooling?" I said, "As far as I know, yes. I don't know why he shouldn't be." And they said, "Well, what about you?" I said, "What about me?" They said, "We know that you wrote a letter to the Wayne Collegiate saying that you didn't agree with the communists, but if a communist person wanted to speak at the university, he should be allowed to." I said,
this was tantamount to treason at the time in American eyes.
In a way, this was during the... I grew up during the McCarthy period. And the McCarthy, I mean, I couldn't stand this guy.
This was the communist witch hunter.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's jump now. You made your whole life, your career in Canada, but then at some point you decided to move. You were a world traveler. I know you traveled extensively. You went all over Europe. You found Zinal in the mountains of Switzerland. You've stayed there now for decades. How did you find Zinal?
I was reading New York Times Sunday, and in the recreation section, they had a big front page, new ski area opening up in Switzerland.
Must have been the 60s then.
This was Zinal, and it was French. And I wanted my kids to learn French because they were living in a country which is bilingual. And so we went for a year to Zinal. I had been there the year before just to check it out. And it was high mountains, 2,800 meter at the top of the ski hill, 4,500 on the other side of the valley. And there was nothing there. And it was French speaking.
So you were like a pioneer at the time. There's nothing up there.
I bought the first...
Maybe a few farms.
No, there wasn't even... I mean, there was nothing grown there. There was, of course, animals, cows. And there still are a few, but even the things that they grew, potatoes, strawberries, they don't do that anymore.
But what was the fascination? Was that what you were looking for?
Well, you have to go there and wake up and see these mountains right out of your front window.
And at the time, I know you were an avid skier, you were a hiker, and this was what you were looking for.
Exactly. So then, when I retired from university, I stayed for a year or two in Quebec. I bought an apartment, and I said, this is not for me. And I said, why don't you go to Zinal? And so I did. And so I went into the apartment that I bought, and it's just a one-room apartment.
But it's home.
Yeah, it's home. It's warm. It's hot water. That's all it is, and it's big enough for me.
But you were always a lover of nature, as I said a moment ago, a hiker, and you were also a ski instructor even for a while.
I was ski instructor there because I was Canadian ski instructor, and they took me, and I taught on a big mountain. I taught mainly beginners, but I polished off my teaching. That I'm very proud of. I know how to handle beginners, and I was very successful with it.
Did you concentrate on English-speaking people? Did you get many English-speaking people?
Very few. I would teach them in German and teach them in French.
And also teach them by showing them how to do it.
Exactly.
By doing.
That's the best way. Yeah.
But over all these years, Aubrey, has much changed? I mean, one would imagine there's been a lot of development.
On the ski slopes, there have been development. There are chairs. There are new...
Chairlifts, you mean.
There are new... one of the sixth longest cable in Switzerland just opened up this in January.
And January 2014.
It goes from Grimentz to the Sorbois, which is on the Zinal side, so it links the two.
But it's, in other words, the village still largely lives on tourism, winter tourism.
Absolutely, absolutely. Restaurants, hotels. There's nothing fancy there, but the skiing is amongst the best skiing in Switzerland, and a lot of the pros, when they can, they train there.
I hear a lot of reports, and we all have. They've been published. They're admitted by Switzerland Tourism and other organizations that fewer and fewer people are coming, especially from the traditional countries like Germany or Holland or Belgium, simply because Switzerland is getting too pricey. It's just getting It's priced itself out of the market. Have you noticed this in Zinal?
In Zinal, let's say at the present time, I'm not saying it's going to remain this way. I'm not saying it is because of the new lift, but it's about half the price to ski there as the big places such as Zermatt, Montana, Verbier, Saas-Fee.
So in other words, Zinal is not yet greedy.
Well, you know, they
have some who'd like to be.
Yeah, as everywhere. So that aspect of it, and that's the aspect of all of skiing, it is the extras. You've got to, and if you have a family, you have to rent a chalet or rent an apartment. That's one thing. The cost of renting skis or buying skis is, in my opinion, and I had a ski shop when I got back to the Canada, and used to sell skis, good ones, 100, 150. Now they're 800, 850.
My grandson just got outfitted with new skis, and not even the best. The new outfit, the boots and the skis, were $1,000 U.S.
And you add in ski clothes, and
it's a rich man's sport these days.
Exactly.
Could we drop sports and the past and get a little political? And I see a gleam of fire coming up in your eye because you are a passionate politician. And whenever you and I get on the phone together or sometimes on Skype or whatever, the discussions continue forever about politics and you get very passionate. I know, because I know you, that you don't appreciate what's happened in this world of globalization and capitalism. And I know that you're pretty down and pretty negative about how politics and economics are going in the world today.
I've read, really, since I've been retired, a lot of history of the 20th century and history of the 19th century. And what we're doing now is a continuation of the events after the First World War, not the Second World War, and we still haven't solved these problems. We've made them worse. The Middle East is an example because the Middle East didn't even exist until the end of the First World War. It was controlled by Turkey before the First World War for 400 years. And Africa, at the end of the First World War, a lot of anti-imperialism began, but it was put down by the imperialists, and we didn't have CNN. If the people were rebelling, the machine guns came out, and the rifles came out, and they just shot them. And, of course, you didn't have anybody reporting or pictures of all of this happening. So nothing has changed in the First World War, and the First World War led more or less directly to the Second World War.
Let me try to read between the lines here a little bit, Aubrey, because I know your philosophy fairly well. What you're saying basically is that exploitation has not changed, but it's never been as bad as it is today. Corporate interests, political exploitation, neocolonialism, this is all very much part of our world today.
Very disturbing. Especially the corruption and the evidence of mafias worldwide. It's not just an Italian phenomena.
Famous Russian mafia today.
Yeah.
Chinese mafia.
And all these countries have mafias, and that's one of the big problems, let's say, with Russia. Russia has their mafia. Everything was great at Sochi, but Sochi is over. Now he's Putin is now he's ordering the troops on the Ukrainian-Russian border.
As we speak.
Yeah. So and still things have not been solved. The Israeli-Palestine issue, the Turkish-Kurdish issue, Africa still is not settled down. And it keeps getting more and more complicated because if you look at the Africans, for example, they don't have money. They don't have. Why are they trying to get into Europe? Because they want jobs, and this is a big problem because the population is growing, and you can't even find jobs for Western Europe for the United States. So It is not getting better. It's getting worse.
It's a worldwide, a global malaise. Let's get closer to home. What about Switzerland's relationship with Europe, which has gone sour since the vote, the recent vote, as we say, putting a limit on migration or immigration into Switzerland, in effect violating an agreement, an accord with the European Union. The European Union has pretty well said it's fed up with Switzerland, picking and choosing for its own benefit and having a very selfish and self-centered view of its relationship to Europe. I don't see Switzerland continuing like this and surviving.
I think that in order to attempt to solve a problem such as this, you have to realize that this is not a Swiss solution or a Swiss problem. It's a worldwide problem. You have the same thing happening in the United States, Canada, Australia. People can't find jobs. They live longer. Mr. Bill Gates gives them shots so they're not dead at 5. They're dead at 25 when they already have children and a wife, and then they come to Lampedusa and they drown. So this is stupid. Has Bill Gates built a Microsoft factory in Egypt, for example? No. So it's all stopgap, because in order we're having enough trouble to get over this recession that has hit since 2008, unemployment is one of the main things, and whoever talks these days in the media about overpopulation, and the earth is overpopulated.
Let me ask you finally, Aubrey, we're running out of time, a direct and simple and straightforward question. A Swiss question. Can Switzerland maintain its traditional direct democracy, aloofness, and independence from the rest of Europe for very much longer? Or is it just going to have to resign itself to the fact it's surrounded by Europe, a united Europe, and it's either going to have to be part of it or cease to exist in the traditional form?
Well, so far it's survived, and if it wants to, it can still survive. And maybe they have to do certain things that they don't want to do. And I think that the importance of the Swiss democracy should be universal.
And others could learn from it.
Yeah, for sure. And, for example, the Belgians fighting against language. Switzerland has a lot to offer, and it was late to join the United Nations, and it doesn't want to get involved. And I think that the Swiss democracy should be stressed.
Whether or not it's ideologically good for the Swiss to have their own unique form of government and culture, can it realistically survive without getting involved directly in Europe?
Well, no. Simply because the world has changed and the European Union takes so much of the Swiss trade.
Aubrey Diem, retired professor of geography and historian, photojournalist, world traveler, and politician. Thank you very much. And also, not least, a longtime resident of Zinal in the mountains of Canton Valley in southern Switzerland. From Domodossola, the honorary Swiss town at the south side of the Simplon Pass, this is Bob Zanotti.
My late friend and Switzerland in Sound collaborator, Aubrey Diem, who passed away on July 15, 2015, near his home in Zinal, southern Switzerland. This is Bob Zanotti.
You were just listening to Switzerland in Sound with Bob Zanotti. For more information, go to www.switzerlandinsound.com.